Chapter 233. The next morning, I had fried tomatoes for breakfast and a tin of green beans which Mother heated up in a saucepan. In the middle of breakfast, Mr. Shears said, OK, he can stay for a few days. And Mother said, he can stay as long as he needs to stay. And Mr. Shears said, this flat is hardly big enough for two people, let alone three. And Mother said, he can understand what you're saying, you know. And Mr. Shears said, what's he going to do? There's no school for him to go to. We've both got jobs. It's bloody ridiculous. And Mother said, Roger, that's enough. And then she made me some Red Zinger herbal tea with sugar in it, but I didn't like it. And she said, you can stay for as long as you want to stay. And after Mr. Shears had gone to work, she made a telephone call to the office and took what's called compassionate leave, which is when someone in your family dies or is ill. Then she said we had to go and buy some clothes for me to wear and some pyjamas and a toothbrush and a flannel. So we went out of the flat and we walked to the main road, which was Hill Lane, which was the A4088, and it was really crowded, and we caught a number 266 bus to Brent Cross Shopping Centre. Except there were too many people in John Lewis, and I was frightened, and I lay down on the floor next to the wristwatches, and I screamed, and Mother had to take me home in a taxi. Then she had to go back to the shopping centre to buy me some clothes and some pyjamas and a toothbrush and a flannel. So I stayed in the spare room while she was gone, because I didn't want to be in the same room as Mr. Shears, because I was frightened of him. And when Mother got home, she brought me a glass of strawberry milkshake and showed me my new pyjamas, and the pattern on them was five-pointed blue stars on a purple background. And I said, I have to go back to Swindon. And Mother said, Christopher, you've only just got here. And I said, I have to go back because I have to sit my maths A-level. And Mother said, you're doing maths A-level? And I said, yes, I'm taking it on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday next week. And Mother said, God. And I said, the Reverend Peters is going to be the invigilator. And Mother said, I mean, that's really good. And I said, I'm going to get an A grade, and that's why I have to go back to Swindon, except I don't want to see Father, so I have to go to Swindon with you. Then Mother put her hands over her face and breathed out hard, and she said, I don't know whether that's going to be possible. And I said, but I have to go. And Mother said, let's talk about this some other time, OK? And I said, OK, but I have to go to Swindon. And she said, Christopher, please. And I drank some of my milkshake. And later on, at 10:31 p.m, I went out onto the balcony to find out whether I could see any stars, but there weren't any because of all the clouds and what's called light pollution, which is light from street lights and car headlights and floodlights and lights in buildings reflecting off tiny particles in the atmosphere and getting in the way of light from the stars. So I went back inside. But I couldn't sleep, and I got out of bed at 2:07 a.m. and I felt scared of Mr. Shears, so I went downstairs and out of the front door into Chapter Road. And there was no one in the street, and it was quieter than it was during the day, even though you could hear traffic in the distance and sirens, so it made me feel calmer. And I walked down Chapter Road and looked at all the cars and the patterns the phone wires made against the orange clouds and the things that people had in their front gardens, like a gnome and a cooker and a tiny pond and a teddy bear. Then I heard two people coming along the road, so I crouched down between the end of a skip and a Ford Transit van, and they were talking in a language that wasn't English, but they didn't see me. And there were two tiny brass cogs in the dirty water in the gutter by my feet, like cogs from a wind-up watch. And I liked it between the skip and the Ford Transit van, so I stayed there for a long time. And I looked out at the street, and the only colours you could see were orange and black and mixtures of orange and black, and you couldn't tell what colours the cars would be during the day. And I wondered whether you could tessellate crosses, and I worked out that you could by imagining a picture in my head. And then I heard Mother's voice, and she was shouting, "Christopher! Christopher!" And she was running down the road, so I came out from between the skip and the Ford Transit van, and she ran up to me and said, "Jesus Christ!" And she stood in front of me and pointed a finger at my face and said, "If you ever do that again, I swear to God, Christopher, I'll love you, but I don't know what I'll do." So she made me promise never to leave the flat on my own, because it was dangerous, and because you couldn't trust people in London because they were strangers. And the next day she had to go to the shops again, and she made me promise not to answer the door if anyone rang the bell. And when she came back, she brought some food pellets for Toby and 3 Star Trek videos, and I watched them in the living room until Mr. Shears came home, and then I went into the spare room again. And I wished that 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG, had a garden. But it didn't. And the day after that, the office where Mother worked rang and told her she couldn't come back to work because they had got someone else to do her job for her, and she was really angry, and she said that it was illegal and she was going to complain. But Mr. Shears said, "Don't be a bloody fool, it was a temporary job, for Christ's sake." And when Mother came into the spare room before I went to sleep, I said, "I have to go to Swindon to take my A-level." And she said, "Christopher, not now. I'm getting phone calls from your father threatening to take me to court. I'm getting it in the neck from Roger. It is not a good time." And I said, "But I have to go because it's been arranged and the Reverend Peters is going to invigilate." And she said, "Look, it's only an exam. I can ring the school. We can get it postponed. You can take it some other time." And I said, "I can't take it another time. It's been arranged. And I've done lots of revision. And Mrs. Gascoigne said we could use a room at school." And Mother said, "Christopher, I am just about holding this together. But I am this close to losing it, all right? So just give me some..." Then she stopped talking, and she put a hand over her mouth, and she stood up and went out of the room. And I started feeling a pain in my chest like I did on the underground, because I thought I wasn't going to be able to go back to Swindon and take my A-level. And the next morning, I looked out of the window in the dining room to count the cars in the street, to see whether it was going to be a quite good day, or a good day, or a super good day, or a black day. But it wasn't like being on the bus to school, because you could look out of the window for as long as you wanted and see as many cars as you wanted. And I looked out of the window for 3 hours, and I saw 5 red cars in a row and 4 yellow cars in a row, which meant it was both a good day and a black day, so the system didn't work anymore. But if I concentrated on counting the cars, it stopped me thinking about my A-level and the pain in my chest. And in the afternoon, Mother took me to Hampstead Heath in a taxi, and we sat on top of a hill and looked at the planes coming into Heathrow Airport in the distance. And I had a red ice lolly from an ice cream van. And Mother said she had rung Mrs. Gascoigne and told her that I was going to take my maths A-levels next year. So I threw my red ice lolly away, and I screamed for a long time, and the pain in my chest hurt so much that it was hard to breathe. And a man came up and asked if I was okay, and Mother said, "Well, what does it look like to you?" And he went away. And then I was tired from screaming, and Mother took me back to the flat in another taxi. And the next morning was Saturday, and she told Mr. Shears to go out and get me some books about science and maths from the library. And they were called 100 Number Puzzles and The Origins of the Universe and Nuclear Power. But they were for children, and they weren't very good, so I didn't read them. And Mr. Shears said, "Well, it's nice to know my contribution's appreciated." And I hadn't eaten anything since I threw away the red ice lolly on Hampstead Heath, so Mother made me a chart with stars on it, like when I was very small. And she filled a measuring jug with Complan and strawberry flavouring, and I got a bronze star for drinking 200 millilitres, and a silver star for drinking 400 millilitres, and a gold star for drinking 600 millilitres. And when Mother and Mr. Shears argued, I took the little radio from the kitchen, and I went and sat in the spare room, and I tuned it halfway between 2 stations, so that all I could hear was white noise, and I turned the volume up really loud and held it against my ear, and the sound filled my head, and it hurt so that I couldn't feel any other sort of hurt, like the hurt in my chest, and I couldn't hear Mother and Mr. Shears arguing, and I couldn't think about not doing my A-level, or the fact that there wasn't a garden at 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG, or the fact that I couldn't see the stars. And then it was Monday, and it was very late at night, and Mr. Shears came into my room and woke me up, and he'd been drinking beer, because he smelled like Father did when he'd been drinking beer with Rodri. And he said, "You think you're so fucking clever, don't you? Don't you ever, ever think about other people for one second, eh? Well, I'll bet you're really pleased with yourself now, aren't you?" And then Mother came in and pulled him out of the room and said, "Christopher, I'm sorry, I'm really, really sorry." The next morning, after Mr. Shears had gone to work, Mother packed lots of her clothes into two suitcases and told me to come downstairs and bring Toby and get into the car. And she put the suitcases into the boot and we drove off. But it was Mr. Shears' car, and I said, "Are you stealing the car?" And she said, "I'm just borrowing it." And I said, "Where are we going?" And she said, "We're going home." And I said, "Do you mean home in Swindon?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Is Father going to be there?" And she said, "Please, Christopher, don't give me any hassle right now, okay?" And I said, "I don't want to be with Father." And she said, just, "It's going to be all right, Christopher, okay? It's going to be all right." And I said, "Are we going back to Swindon so I can do my maths A-level?" And Mother said, "What?" And I said, "I'm meant to be doing my maths A-level tomorrow." And Mother spoke very slowly, and she said, "We are going back to Swindon, because if we stay in London any longer, someone was going to get hurt, and I don't necessarily mean you." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Now I need you to be quiet for a while." And I said, "How long do you want me to be quiet for?" And she said, "Jesus." And then she said, "Half an hour, Christopher. I need you to be quiet for half an hour." And we drove all the way to Swindon, and it took 3 hours 12 minutes, and we had to stop for petrol, and Mother bought me a Milky Bar, but I didn't eat it. And we got caught in a long traffic jam, which was caused by people slowing down to look at an accident on the other carriageway. And I tried to work out a formula to determine whether a traffic jam would be caused just by people slowing down, and how this was influenced by A, the density of traffic, and B, the speed of the traffic, and C, how quickly drivers braked when they saw the brake lights of the car in front coming on. But I was too tired because I hadn't slept the night before, because I was thinking about not being able to do my maths A-level. So I fell asleep. And when we got to Swindon, Mother had keys to the house, and we went in and she said, "Hello?" But there was no one there because it was 1:23 p.m. And I was frightened, but Mother said I'd be safe, so I went up to my room and closed the door. I took Toby out of my pocket, and I let him run around, and I played Minesweeper, and I did the expert version in 174 seconds, which was 75 seconds longer than my best time. And then it was 6:35 p.m, and I heard Father come home in his van, and I moved the bed up against the door so he couldn't get in, and he came into the house, and he and Mother shouted at each other. And Father shouted, "How the fuck did you get in here?" And Mother shouted, "This is my house too, in case you've forgotten." And Father shouted, "Is your fucking fancy man here as well?" And then I picked up the bongo drums that Uncle Terry had bought me, and I knelt down in the corner of the room, and I pressed my head into the join between the two walls, and I banged the drums and I groaned and I carried on doing this for an hour, and then Mother came into the room and said Father had gone. And she said that Father had gone to stay with Rodri for a while, and we would get a place to live of our own in the next few weeks. Then I went into the garden, and I found Toby's cage behind the shed, and I brought it inside, and I cleaned it and put Toby back in it. And I asked Mother if I could do my maths A-level the next day. And she said, I'm sorry, Christopher. And I said, can I do my maths A-level? And she said, you're not listening to me, are you, Christopher? And I said, I'm listening to you. And Mother said, I told you. I rang your headmistress. I told her you were in London. I told her you'd do it next year. And I said, but I'm here now, and I can take it. And Mother said, I'm sorry, Christopher. I was trying to do things properly. I was trying not to mess things up. And my chest began hurting again, and I folded my arms, and I rocked backwards and forwards and groaned. And Mother said, I didn't know we'd be coming back. But I carried on groaning and rocking backwards and forwards. And Mother said, come on, this isn't going to solve anything. Then she asked if I wanted to watch one of my Blue Planet videos about life under the Arctic ice or the migration of humpback whales. But I didn't say anything because I knew I wasn't going to be able to do my maths A-level. And it was like pressing your thumbnail against a radiator when it's really hot and the pain starts and it makes you want to cry. And the pain keeps hurting even when you take your thumb away from the radiator. Then Mother made me some carrots and broccoli and ketchup, but I didn't eat them. And I didn't sleep that night either. The next day, Mother drove me to school in Mr. Shear's car because we missed the bus. And when we were getting into the car, Mrs. Shears came across the road and said to Mother, you've got a fucking nerve. And Mother said, get into the car, Christopher. But I couldn't get into the car because the door was locked. And Mrs. Shears said, so, has he finally dumped you too? Then Mother opened her door and got into the car and unlocked my door and I got in and we drove away. And when we got to school, Siobhan said, so, you're Christopher's mother. And Siobhan said that she was glad to see me again, and she asked if I was okay, and I said I was tired. And Mother explained that I was upset because I couldn't do my maths A-level, so I hadn't been eating properly or sleeping properly. And then Mother went away, and I drew a picture of a bus using perspective so that I didn't think about the pain in my chest. And after lunch, Siobhan said that she had spoken to Mrs. Gascoigne and she still had my A-level papers in 3 sealed envelopes in her desk. So I asked if I could still do my A-level. And Siobhan said, I think so. We're going to ring the Reverend Peters this afternoon and make sure he can still come in and be your invigilator. And Mrs. Gascoigne is going to write a letter to the examination board to say that you're going to take the exam after all. And hopefully they'll say that that's okay. But we can't know that for sure. Then she stopped talking for a few seconds. I thought I should tell you now, so you could think about it. And I said, so I could think about what? And she said, is this what you want to do, Christopher? And I thought about the question, and I wasn't sure what the answer was, because I wanted to do my maths A-level, but I was very tired. And when I tried to think about maths, my brain didn't work properly. And when I tried to remember certain facts, like the logarithmic formula for the approximate number of prime numbers not greater than x, I couldn't remember them. And this made me frightened. And Siobhan said, you don't have to do it, Christopher. If you say you don't want to do it, no one's going to be angry with you. And it won't be wrong or illegal or stupid. It will just be what you want, and that will be fine. And I said, I want to do it, because I don't like it when I put things in my timetable and I have to take them out again, because when I do that, it makes me feel sick. And Siobhan said, OK. And she rang the Reverend Peters, and he came into school at 3:27 p.m, and he said, so, young man, are we ready to roll? And I did paper one of my maths A-level, sitting in the art room. And Reverend Peters was the invigilator, and he sat at a desk while I did the exam, and he read a book called The Cost of Discipleship by Dietrich Bonhoeffer and ate a sandwich. And in the middle of the exam, he went and smoked a cigarette outside the window, but he watched me through the window in case I cheated. And when I opened the paper and read through it, I couldn't think how to answer any of the questions, and also I couldn't breathe properly. And I wanted to hit somebody or stab them with my Swiss Army knife, But there wasn't anyone to hit or stab with my Swiss Army knife except the Reverend Peters, and he was very tall. And if I hit him or stabbed him with my Swiss Army knife, he wouldn't be my invigilator for the rest of the exam. So I took deep breaths, like Siobhan said I should do when I want to hit someone in school, and I counted 50 breaths and did cubes of the cardinal numbers as I counted, like this. 1, 8, 27, etc. And that made me feel a little calmer. But the exam was 2 hours long, and 20 minutes had already gone, so I had to work really fast, and I didn't have time to check my answers properly. And that night, just after I got home, Father came back to the house, and I screamed, but Mother said she wouldn't let anything bad happen to me, and I went into the garden and lay down and looked at the stars in the sky and made myself negligible. And when Father came out of the house, he looked at me for a long time, and then he punched the fence and made a hole in it and went away. And I slept a little bit that night because I was doing my maths A-level, and I had some spinach soup for supper. And the next day I did paper 2, and the Reverend Peters read The Cost of Discipleship by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. But this time he didn't smoke a cigarette, and Siobhan made me go into the toilets before the exam and sit on my own and do breathing and counting. And I was playing The 11th Hour on my computer that evening when a taxi stopped outside the house. Mr. Shears was in the taxi, and he got out of the taxi and threw a big cardboard box of things belonging to Mother onto the lawn. And they were a hairdryer, and some knickers, and some L'Oreal shampoo, and a box of muesli, and 2 books, Diana, Her True Story by Andrew Morton, and Rivals by Jilly Cooper, and a photograph of me in a silver frame. And the glass in the photograph frame broke when it fell onto the grass. Then he got some keys out of his pocket, and got into his car and drove away. And Mother ran out of the house, and she ran into the street and shouted, "Don't fucking bother coming back either!" And she threw the box of muesli, and it hit the boot of his car as he drove away, and Mrs. Shears was looking out of her window when Mother did this. The next day I did paper 3, and the Reverend Peters read the Daily Mail and smoked 3 cigarettes. And this was my favourite question. Prove the following result. A triangle with sides that can be written in the form n squared plus 1, n squared minus 1, and 2n, where n is greater than 1, is right-angled. Show, by means of a counterexample, that the converse is false. And I was going to write out how I answered the question, except Siobhan said that it wasn't very interesting, but I said it was. And she said people wouldn't want to read the answers to a maths question in a book, and she said I could put the answer in an appendix, which is an extra chapter at the end of a book, which people can read if they want to. And then my chest didn't hurt so much, and it was easier to breathe. But I still felt sick because I didn't know if I'd done well in the exam, and because I didn't know if the examination board would allow my paper to be considered after Mrs. Gascoigne had told them I wasn't going to take it. And it's best if you know a good thing is going to happen, like an eclipse or getting a microscope for Christmas. And it's bad if you know a bad thing is going to happen, like having a filling or going to France. But I think it's worse if you don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing which is going to happen. And Father came round to the house that night, and I was sitting on the sofa watching University Challenge and just answering the science questions. And he stood in the doorway of the living room, and he said, "Don't scream, okay, Christopher? I'm not going to hurt you." And Mother was standing behind him, so I didn't scream. Then he came a bit closer to me, and he crouched down like you do with dogs to show that you're not an aggressor, and he said, "I wanted to ask you how the exam went, but I didn't say anything." And Mother said, "Tell him, Christopher." But I still didn't say anything. And Mother said, "Please, Christopher." So I said, "I don't know if I got all the questions right, because I was really tired and I hadn't eaten any food, so I couldn't think properly." And then Father nodded, and he didn't say anything for a short while. Then he said, "Thank you." And I said, "What for?" And he said, "Just thank you." Then he said, "I'm very proud of you, Christopher. Very proud. I'm sure you did really well." And then he went away, and I watched the rest of University Challenge. And the next week, Father told Mother she had to move out of the house, but she couldn't because she didn't have any money to pay rent for a flat. And I asked if Father would be arrested and go to prison for killing Wellington, because we could live in the house if he was in prison. But Mother said the police would only arrest Father if Mrs. Shears did what's called pressing charges, which is telling the police you want them to arrest someone for a crime, because the people don't arrest people for little crimes unless you ask them, and Mother said that killing a dog was only a little crime. But then everything was okay, because Mother got a job on the till in a garden centre, and the doctor gave her pills to take every morning to stop her feeling sad, except that sometimes they made her dizzy and she fell over if she stood up too fast. So we moved into a room in a big house that was made of red bricks, and the bed was in the same room as the kitchen, and I didn't like it because it was small and the corridor was painted brown and there was a toilet and a bathroom that other people used, and Mother had to clean it before I used it or I wouldn't use it, and sometimes I wet myself because other people were in the bathroom. And the corridor outside the room smelled like gravy and the bleach they used to clean the toilets at school. And inside the room it smelled like socks and pine air freshener. And I didn't like waiting to find out about my maths A-level. And whenever I thought about the future, I couldn't see anything clearly in my head, and that made a panic start. So Siobhan said I shouldn't think about the future. She said, "Just think about today. Think about things that have happened, especially about good things that have happened." And one of the good things was that Mother bought me a wooden puzzle. And you had to detach the top part of the puzzle from the bottom part, and it was really difficult. And another good thing was that I helped Mother paint her room white with a hint of wheat, except I got paint in my hair. And she wanted to wash it out by rubbing shampoo on my head when I was in the bath, but I wouldn't let her. So there was paint in my hair for 5 days, and then I cut it out with a pair of scissors. But there were more bad things than good things. And one of them was that Mother didn't get back from work till 5:30 p.m., so I had to go to Father's house between 3:49 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. because I wasn't allowed to be on my own, and Mother said I didn't have a choice, so I pushed the bed against the door in case Father tried to come in. And sometimes he tried to talk to me through the door, but I didn't answer him. And sometimes I heard him sitting on the floor outside the door quietly for a long time. And another bad thing was that Toby died, because he was 2 years and 7 months, which is very old for a rat, and I said I wanted to bury him, but Mother didn't have a garden, so I buried him in a big plastic pot of earth, like a pot you put a plant in. And I said I wanted another rat, but Mother said I couldn't have one, because the room was too small. And I solved the puzzle, because I worked out that there were 2 bolts inside the puzzle and there were 2 tunnels with metal rods in. And you had to hold the puzzle so that both rods slid to the end of their tunnels and they weren't crossing the intersection between the 2 pieces of the puzzle, and then you could pull them apart. And Mother picked me up from Father's house one day after she had finished work, and Father said, "Christopher, can I have a talk with you?" And I said, "No." And Mother said, "It's okay, I'll be here." And I said, "I don't want to talk to Father." And Father said, "I'll do you a deal." And he was holding the kitchen timer, which is a big plastic tomato sliced through the middle, and he twisted it and it started ticking. And he said, "5 minutes, okay? That's all. Then you can go." So I sat on the sofa and he sat on the armchair and Mother was in the hallway, and Father said, "Christopher, look, things can't go on like this. I don't know about you, but this just hurts too much. You being in the house but refusing to talk to me. You have to learn to trust me, and I don't care how long it takes. If it's 1 minute one day, and 2 minutes the next, and 3 minutes the next, and it takes years, I don't care. Because this is important, This is more important than anything else. And then he tore a little strip of skin away from the side of the thumbnail on his left hand. And he said, let's call it a project. A project we have to do together. You have to spend more time with me. And I have to show you that you can trust me. And it'll be difficult at first because it's a difficult project. But it'll get better. A promise. Then he rubbed the sides of his forehead with his fingertips and he said, you don't have to say anything, not right now. You just have to think about it. And I've got your present to show you that I really mean what I say and to say sorry. And because, well, you'll see what I mean. Then he got out of the armchair and he walked over to the kitchen door and opened it. And there was a big cardboard box on the floor and there was a blanket in it. And he bent down and put his hands inside the box and he took a little sandy-coloured dog out. Then he came back through and he gave me the dog. And he said, he's 2 months old and he's a golden retriever. And the dog sat in my lap and I stroked it. And no one said anything for a while. Then Father said, Christopher, I would never, ever do anything to hurt you. Then no one said anything. Then Mother came into the room and said, you won't be able to take him away with you, I'm afraid. The bed sits too small. But your father's going to look after him here, and you can come and take him out for walks whenever you want. And I said, does he have a name? And Father said, no, you can decide what to call him. And the dog chewed my finger. And then it was 5 minutes and the tomato alarm went. So Mother and I drove back to her room. And the next week there was a lightning storm and the lightning hit a big tree in the park near Father's house and knocked it down. And men came and cut the branches up with chainsaws and carried the logs away on a lorry. And all that was left was a big black pointed stump made of carbonized wood. And I got the results of my maths A-level, and I got an A grade, which is the best result, and it made me feel happy. And I called the dog Sandy. And Father bought him a collar and a lead, and I was allowed to take him for walks to the shop and back. And I played with him with a rubber bone. And Mother got flu, and I had to spend 3 days with Father and stay in his house. But it was okay, because Sandy slept on my bed, so he'd bark if anyone came into the room during the night. And Father made a vegetable patch in the garden, and I helped him. And we planted carrots and peas and spinach, and I'm going to pick them and eat them when they're ready. And I went to a bookshop with Mother, and I bought a book called Further Maths for A-Level. And Father told Mrs. Gascoigne that I was going to take A-Level Further Maths next year, and she said okay. And I'm going to pass it and get an A grade. And in 2 years' time, I'm going to take A-level physics and get an A grade. And then, when I've done that, I'm going to go to university in another town. And it doesn't have to be in London, because I don't like London. And there are universities in lots of places, and not all of them are in big cities. And I can live in a flat with a garden and a proper toilet. And I can take Sandy and my books and my computer. And then I'll get a first-class honours degree and I'll become a scientist. And I know I can do this because I went to London on my own and because I solved the mystery of who killed Wellington and I found my mother and I was brave and I wrote a book. And that means I can do anything.